Time for the Gate Guys podcast. It's Dr. Sean Allen here in Chicago with my partner, Dr. Ivor Werlop. Cue up the band. Welcome back, everybody. It's time for the podcast once again. It's been a while since you guys have had us on and in your ears, but it's time to get this podcast back up and going so we can answer some of your questions and get to your emails. How you doing today, Ivo?
I'm doing pretty good. How's the weather there in Chicagoland?
It's a nice day here. It is a nice day here. Some sunshine, so everything's good. Hey, listen, I heard you got a new bike.
I did.
What'd you get, man?
Bought a Kawasaki Ninja 500 and got to test drive it in the rain. One of my biggest fears was driving on wet pavement with the motorcycle, but it all went well. I went well, and I'm here, and I live to tell about it. So
very cool. This isn't your first bike, though, is it?
No, I've been dirt biking most of my life. My first official road bike. I've ridden on the road many times, but not with the road bike. So.
Very cool. Well, we look forward to hearing about some of your journeys, man. So welcome back, everybody. We're going to try and make this something new and fresh. We're going to try and make sure it's not too boring. We will always have some little housekeeping things, and we'll try and throw those in, but not all at the beginning to bore you. We'll try and get right down to things right away. We'll try and tell some stories. We'll try and make sure that you're up on new research that we're reading, new stuff with the website, any new projects we've got going on, talks coming up, etc. So please continue to email us with all of your questions and things that you want to hear from us, and we'll try and address them here. The podcast should be really easy for us to do because we can just read them off and go into depth on a topic rather than two-finger Charlie typing. So keep all the information coming, and please, if you feel that this is something of value, forward it on to your friends. We know podcasts are pretty easy to listen to in your car, while you're out cutting the lawn, doing some yard work, etc., and we're going to try and make it so that this is friendly and informative on multiple levels so that you know, we can make this a experience, as we say, for you guys, rather than just throwing a whole bunch of information in your ear, which is hard to digest. So, got some suggestions, please forward it to us. Anything you want to talk about, Ivo? What have we got in the hopper? I think we got to...
We have got a bone to pick.
Uh-oh.
We hear from a lot of people, you know, we ask a lot of people, and I always ask people, particularly trainers or, you know, other docs or whatever. It's like, hey, why don't you integrate more gait into your professional practice? And unfortunately, the answer we get back, and I'm sure you get this too, Sean, a lot of times from, you know, misinformed coaches, trainers, docs, therapists, is that it really doesn't apply to what they do with their clients. And I don't see how human movement and how people move through the gravitational plane doesn't apply to getting people better.
Yeah, imagine that. We all walk. It's not important, though, right?
Right. It's not important. Just, you know, fixing them. It's, if the knee hurts, why look at it while, you know, it's functioning to see maybe what's going on? You know, you put them on, you do your basic testing, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, everything's fine, you know. Your ACL's intact, your MCL's intact. It all works.
Yeah.
So,
well, and there's such a huge neurologic component to gait. I mean, you know this better than anybody. You know?
Yeah, neuro is everything. Ted used to, like, pound that into our heads on a daily basis.
This is the Ted Carrick, right?
Oh, Ted, yeah. It would be amazing. We would be in a lecture hall of 90 people, right? About 90 people in my first neuro class that I went through. And Ted would be, like, lecturing on something, and he would manage to find the one person in the room who was sleeping. And he had this laser pointer. And he would have the laser pointer, and if you, like, had the laser pointer on your chest, it was like being in the crosshairs, man. You stood up, and he would make you, like, recite things. You know, that's neurological pathways, you know, whatever we happen to be talking about that day. Or if we were teaching a concept, every single person would have to get up in turn and recite like the entire pathway from start to finish.
So like
so you've heard it 90 times. Yeah.
So like a lesion in the foot or something, trace the sensory lesion from,
exactly.
from the foot all the way into the brain and then back down, that type of thing.
You got it. Yeah, and he would just do that every single week. So we did that, you know, for 3 years, which is one of the reasons some of the stuff, it's like I say, can say it in my sleep, you know. It's just I've done it so many times. But it's so good, and I appreciate the education that I received from Dr. Carrick, and I was fortunate enough to actually have him as an instructor. He doesn't do a lot of teaching nowadays in the States. He's mostly over in Europe and doing a lot of stuff with the Carrick Institute. But he's just an absolutely amazing, one of the most brilliant people I've ever met.
Well, for our listeners out there who don't know who Dr. Ted Carrick is, he's kind of one of these pioneers on the forefront of functional neurology. And you know, he's been working with Sidney Crosby and a lot of professional people. I guess this guy's got like a year or two waiting list for people who've got, you know, major lesions and seizures and coma issues, all kinds of wild stuff, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And he's just, you know, and he's just amazing, and he's so far ahead of his time. There was stuff he said, we'd look at each other, and we would just, like, shake our head and say, no way. And then 6 months later, you'd read a research paper, and you were like, wow, he was right.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it reminds you of, was it Gandhi, where they, you know, at first people will ridicule you, and then they will make fun of you, and then they will start to acknowledge your ideas and then finally acceptance. But usually the acceptance is long after you're gone. And, you know, when I think of, you know, and I'm sure I butchered that, but when I think of Dr. Carrick, I think of that stuff and, you know, how he's just not accepted in the mainstream, but no one can really disprove him. And, but, you know, I think in time everybody will go, wow, that guy was spot on, you know. I mean, I listen to you, and when you talk about these things, I mean, it's so deeply embedded into your brain how these patterns and pathways and stuff, and I don't think some of the people really appreciate what it took to get to where you are. So I know I'm very appreciative to have you on the team here. So,
well, I do the same when I listen to your lecture, and you'll just take this concept that, you know, it would have taken me an hour to explain. You do it in like 3 seconds with like an example.
Well, that's what happens when you've got a. That's what happens when you've got a smaller brain, though, dude. It's all smoke and mirrors, man.
It's yin and yang. It's complementary energies, yeah. And it just it works.
We are a good team, man. We are a good team.
Yeah.
So you've got hey, just talk about the Shoe Fit program just for a minute, because we're about to launch this sucker.
Oh, yeah. Well, it is ready to go. We ran the beta. Actually, my office was one of the test sites. We have our first certified individual, and we actually did a big gate gig at our office last week that was tremendously successful. We got all of our sponsors. You know, we have we sell like Innovate and Ultra and Vibram and Brooks. Well, anyway, we got all these people that donate shoes to us. We had a bunch of people there. We watched people walk. It was a real walking shoe nerd fest. But anyway, Julie, our first certified individual, Julie Myers, who's one of my employees, actually got up and gave a talk, very, very impressive, about the Lemming shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, was just great. And she starts talking about the forefoot has 15-degree splay during stance phase. And we were just so proud of her. I was like, wow, Julie, go, go, go. So you really can learn a lot. The program should launch here in the next 2 weeks. I've got all the final stuff. We're just putting the final finishing touches on and then trying to get the buttons installed into the website so people can do it. And people will have the opportunity to either take all three modules together in a sort of a download format, if they would like, for a little bit of a, you know, kind of like a price break. And then, or they could take the modules individually. And then when they're done with that, they'll have the opportunity, if they would like to take the Shoe Fit certification exam, which makes you basically level one certified. And that's through the IFGEC. So it'll be really, really good. And we should be able to coincide the launch of that with launch of the site.
Very cool. Very cool. I'm excited. And Ivo, you know, I've said this before, you've done so much work on that project. In fact, pretty much the whole barrel full. And it's really an awesome program, everybody. And, you know, we try not to promote this stuff too much because it sounds like we're selling stuff, but this is something that has been in dire need out in the community, from physicians to shoe stores, coaches and trainers, and people have been asking for this forever. So we finally decided just to get this thing done. And after the Texas gig, with you know a couple hundred people sitting there listening to us, or at least it seemed like that many, it was a full house. We realized that this is really something people want. It's just taken us forever to get to it because we got busy clinics, and you got kids, and you know, and a wife, and we're just busy guys. So.
Yeah. No, it'll be great.
Good.
So look for that in the next 2 weeks here.
Yeah.
And it's definitely a team effort. You know, there's no one in we. It's both of us. And
well, it's cool.
Definitely, you know, you certainly shine in the presentation on this, some of the sections that you're doing and stuff. It's just it's great. Every time I listen to your lecture, I learn.
Well, but
anyway, hey, we got an email case here.
Let's
blow through this here. Dear Gate guys, thanks for the video presentations on crossover gate. They were educational and provided more detail than I've been able to find anywhere else on this issue. Well, I believe that we're probably the only people that have talked about it. So that's a good thing. My son is a high school freshman and has been competing in cross-country middle distance for a couple years. He aspires to be an elite runner and is very committed to training and competing. He has so far done very well, but would consider he has what I would consider a severe crossover gait. My concerns are twofold. One, his crossover is so severe that he may get injured as he continues to increase training intensity. Two, inefficiency of his crossover gait may prevent him from reaching his full potential. And I would like to add on that, yes, and it will also cost him time. What would you suggest is the best way to get an expert opinion about the cause and corrective action for this particular case? Do you have any more specific exercises or training that you would help to suggest this? Thanks again. Regards, Mike.
Well, let me get rolling on this just for a minute. Here's what you need to do, guys. Go to our blog at thegateguys, thegateguys.tumblr.com. Type in the search button cross over gate. That's in spaces. Cross space over space gate. Crossover gate. You will see 11 blog posts from us on the crossover gate with accompanied videos, long dialogues with other links to other articles that we've written. So that's where you need to start. And we're saying this because really no one else is talking about the crossover gate. We seem to be the authorities on the web, which makes us pretty much the authorities, as we think, in the world at this point. So the crossover gate is something that you need to be able to recognize and then understand the problem and then learn how you got into the problem to fix it. And certainly there is a concern for Mike and his son. So it's good that he's in high school and making some corrections now. What you'll see in some of the videos is that typically sprinters don't have much crossover because they're trying to get to more glute and more power, and it's way more efficient. And what we tend to see in middle distance runners and then further out into cross country and the 5,000, 10,000, et cetera, running, is that there's a little bit more of the crossover fashion. It doesn't mean that it's more mechanically efficient, but we tend to see perhaps a little bit more economical to using a little less glute. But, you know, this needs to be fixed. And if it's that severe, as you said, it's going to challenge his efficiency and his time. I mean, if you're spending more time taking the normal leg pendulum that's supposed to swing freely in the sagittal plane and you're crossing it over, you're eating up time in the frontal plane by crossing over as opposed to using the time more effectively into the glutes and pushing forward. So it's inefficient. How much needs to be corrected? Well, it's going to depend on a lot of the parameters that you may touch on. You know, does he have tib barum and, you know, bowed legs? What are his foot mechanics like? Is he a heavy pronator? That's going to complicate this. A lot of other factors. Anything you want to toss in here?
No, only that, you know, crossover gait, in addition to all the stuff we talk about, also places a tremendous amount of compressive strain at the femoral acetabular articulation. So you're talking about, you know, cartilage with increased pressure over time equals degeneration. So this is something, you know, at least you're addressing it now. You know, young kid, plenty of, hopefully, plenty of cartilage, plenty of, you know, life left in those hips, so correcting it now is good. And we really do cover this more than thoroughly from multiple angles. So I would say look at those vids, look at the stuff that we have posted on the blog. If you still have questions, Mike, then give us a shout back, and we're more than happy to talk about it specifically once you've done that there.
Yeah, there's a three-video series on our YouTube channel as well. Just type in The Gate Guys into YouTube, and you'll see our channel there. And type in Crossover Gate, and you'll find a three-part video series on this with demos and whatnot. But a lot of these runners have a weak glute medius, and that's why they can't keep the leg pendulum in the vertical plane or, you know, straight up and down. And but as you had said, a lot of the issues with there's some foot pronation issues or tibial torsion or femoral versions and torsions of a present, you're going to place a lot of twist at the knee joint, which is just a simple hinge joint, and you don't want a lot of torque going through there. So this is not only something that needs to be corrected from a mechanical or efficiency standpoint, but from a biomechanical injury prevention standpoint. So we could go into a lot of depth on this, but we've given you the resources. So if you want to get all of the details, go and check out those blog posts and the videos, and then email us if you got some questions.
All right. Hey, we got another case here.
Cool.
Hello, my name is Steve, and I have worked on the sales floor of some of the best running stores in the country, one store, name removed, for several years, and currently at another store. While in store number one, I felt I had tapped out the training about human foot and leg biomechanics, and starting interning at a podorthic clinic with a woman whose advanced education in biomechanics and was a collegiate track and cross-country coach. Many of the videos you do echo the things that she taught me. I wanted to say thank you for starting to bring some consistency to the industry, especially for the floor staff. Many times I feel as if we focus on some of the other aspects of the injury, such as buy-in, community involvement, etc., while forgetting that if you don't have a good, knowledgeable staff, our channel would cease to exist. Where are you guys based out of? Thanks, Steve. Well, Steve, we're based out of the Chicago suburbs and west of Denver, Dillon, Colorado. Our clinics are in those areas, but we have an international presence on the web, and that's where most people get a hold of us. And Steve, I would also say that, you know, at some point, if you guys need a hand, we do you know, training. Both we'll be probably putting a training together, a seminar together for this fall, where we'll that'll probably occur in the Chicago area. Am I right, Sean?
Yeah, absolutely. And we've got talks all the time. I know you do some out in your community, and I do some in mine. And we've got a gig coming up here very shortly with the NSC, the National Strength and Conditioning Association. We're going to try and give them a good talk and try and get into their national level conferences so that we can bring some of this good information to more people to help others, because there's only two of us, and we're pretty slammed in our practices, and we just need to bring other people's knowledge base up so that we can create a community of people talking the same talk and doing the same work, so we can all kind of raise our levels together. On the note of what you were talking about, you know, we're based out of Chicago and Denver, you know, Dillon, Colorado area, but I mean, we're also based off the internet, and you can get us on our Facebook. Just type in The Gate Guys and find our page. Make sure it's the page and not our you know, our personal social. We've got a Gate Guys on the social side too, but make sure it's the page. And we put our blog posts up there every day, and we also link some other articles and whatnot. We're also on Twitter as well. So you guys can reach us in a lot of different ways, as well as our email, thegateguys@gmail.com. So if you need to get a hold of us, let us know. And if you've got some videos of you or an athlete, please feel free to send them to us. We'll send out a disclaimer so that you know we're not trying to diagnose this stuff. We're just trying to feed you information to make better choices on your end. And we're probably going to set that up as some kind of a service fee to make sure our time is used wisely here. So if we make this thing free, we're going to get thousands. So if we make it worth your while and our while, then it'll get something done positively for the athlete. So we'll figure some kind of fee structure for that stuff. Otherwise, we're just going to get swamped. So thanks for
emailing. We're already swamped,
yeah, aren't we?
there's no. And also, Steve, you know, Sean and I are available for different events and things like that. We get contacted about speaking engagements all the time. There's a link on the new webpage once it launches where you can get a hold of us. We can come out. We can do in-house training. We can do seminar for your staff, group of stores, that kind of stuff in that area. And there's a whole, you know, tiered structure of different services that we can offer you as well. So,
and we're particularly looking forward for somebody who's willing to set up a Caribbean cruise to have us speak on. So if anybody's willing to put that thing together, we will make sure we are there with our you know, our Bahama shorts and shirts and cigars and Corona.
And Sean will have his gold chains on.
And baby oil. Let's not go there. Yeah.
Yeah, and we'll dye our goatees purple.
may give me an opportunity to finally grow that mohawk I've always wanted. So
it
could be radical here. Hey, let's talk about shoe talk here. We've received a couple shoes. We receive a lot of shoes, and if you're a company out there and you want our opinion, we've helped companies with looking at their product in a beta style format before they hit the market, but people are also sending us their shoes and swag, etc., to test out and give us their opinion. And we received a couple pairs lately. We received the Lemmings lately, which used to be STEM footwear. And I know you carry those in your office, right, Evo?
We do. They are huge lifestyle shoe, and they're really awesome. It's a zero drop, basically super wide toe box slipper. It's got about probably between 3 and 5 mils of, if I had to guess, 40, 50 durometer EVA on the bottom with a really nice dual siping sole and a cross pattern. So flex points all over the place. They're just super duper comfy. And the whole deal is they were STEM shoes, but I guess Nordstrom's had a line called STEM Naturalizers or something like that, and they had to change the name to Lemming. So the shoe really they improved on the shoe a little bit. They now include a removable insole, which can take up volume because the shoes tend to run a little bit wide for them. But, yeah, Lemmings, they're pretty awesome.
I like them. And for those listeners out there who are not up on some of the topics yet, zero drop means that the forefoot and the rear foot are on the same plane. There is no rise in the heel. We call this a ramp delta, and the ramp delta on this shoe is zero. A lot of shoes out there have anywhere from a 4-millimeter ramp delta to 8 to 12. Some are 20. And, you know, traditional running shoes have been way up there in the numbers, which means the heel is always lifted, which can promote some shortness in the calf, and it purchases your forward onto the forefoot. But this is a zero drop shoe. I wear these around my office, as well as another pair we're going to talk about, which are the Ultras. And I got some Ultra provisions in from Jeremy and Golden over at Ultra. These guys are really cool guys, and they put together a great product. You sell these as well, don't you, Ivo?
Yeah, the provisions are really nice. It's sort of, I don't want to call it a motion control shoe, but it's got an integrated forefoot Varus post that runs the length of the shoe that's removable that you can stick in. And the midsole material, they do use that stuff A-Bound, which is a proprietary type of EVA that's supposed to have a longer shelf life, you know, undergo more compressions. So this one is supposed to be a little bit more torsionally rigid, and it comes in some other colors compared to the Instinct or the Intuition, because the Provision's the guy's version, the Provision S is the women's version. Mm-hmm. And it's a really nice shoe. Ultra's a real user-friendly company. They only have about 5 or 6 models of shoes that they make. Each one is sex-specific as far as male or female type last. And they're a smaller company out of Utah, but they are actually, really coming up in the shoe world. They won a bunch of awards last year for the Instinct, the Intuition, and I actually run in the Lone Peaks, mm-hmm. Which is their zero-drop trail shoe, basically, which has a fair amount of EVA on the bottom, probably 8 or 9 millimeters, but again, it's zero-drop, mm-hmm. and it's just nice for when you're running up over rocks and all sorts of stuff. Real roomy toe box, so very, very comfortable shoe.
Yeah, I've got the provisions, and I've been doing a little bit of running in them. I like them. I don't use the extra insert that you said, like it's got the wedge on there. For those of you who have the shoe or are looking at the shoe or going to a store, you're going to pull out the EVA insert, and you're going to find a gray insert underneath. At least mine was gray, and when you take it out, you'll find that it's wedged on the medial side in the heel and in the forefoot. It's wedged thicker medially and thin laterally, so it's actually a wedge. And what that does, as you said, is it's going to lift it's going to help the heel from everting as much, and it's going to stop the forefoot from pronating as much. So it kind of act like a little forefoot and metatarsal post, if you will, right, Ivo?
Yeah, the idea is really not new. If you look at Specialized, Andy Pruitt did a lot of work with those guys. They make bike shoes for those people that don't know. They have a adjustable forefoot Varus posting system that actually goes into their shoes, and the shoes, there's a particular model that's actually built with a built-in post. So just be aware that not everybody needs this post, and if we are posting the foot medially into Varus, in other words, we're inverting the foot, and your foot is able to gain a full range of motion, so you can make that tripod between the heel, base of the fifth, and base of the first metatarsal, then the post's really doing you a disservice. It's for people that mechanically just cannot get that first raid down. They just don't have any plantar flexion in that, and they can't make the medial aspect of the tripod. Or people that are overpronators that you're trying to shut down just a little bit of that. So it can be a really good thing, but it's certainly not for everybody.
Yeah, so it's nice that they made this a removable insert. I've had a lot of clients that have this, and they really don't know what it is, and they come in with the shoe, and I have to educate them on this a little bit. And I said, look, you know, in the meantime, you actually do need this, but let's make your foot tripod a little stronger. We give them some homework and increase their extensor strength a little bit. And then I said, look, we'll wean you out of this thing as soon as you can. And, you know, the patients are very appreciative when, you know, you have enough knowledge to help them with the shoe a little bit. And my patients were like, wow, I just had no idea. And, you know, I said, look, it's not your job. It's our job. And so hopefully it will be our listeners' job to ramp up their knowledge on these shoes as well. So, yeah.
And, you know, maybe in the future, one of the things we can do is I can contact Andrew at Lemming, and I can contact Golden as well, and maybe we can get him on the show, just to talk for, you know, 15 minutes, 10 minutes, just talk about their stuff, tell us about their wares, where their head is at, and give us a little preview on the product. But, yeah, that'd be good.
It's a great idea. I think that's what we had talked about. We're going to try and get some guest speakers on here from time to time and talking about, you know, the research people are doing or the product they've got. And it'll allow people to talk about, you know, a good product. You know, it'll increase the knowledge base for all of our listeners. So you're not going to just hear us, the two of us, just rambling on about stuff. We're going to get some other people in here, and hopefully this will be a really great community of people. We've already got a great lineup of some people here. So I know for our website, we've got Tom Michaud has already written the first article on our website. We're going to have a guest writer of the month, and that person will, you know, put a article on our website that is proprietary for our website at that first month, and then they can do what they want with it, but making sure that everybody has got a home base where they can check in. So we got some good stuff coming down the pipeline. I've got a question for you. Have you heard of the 100th monkey?
Only that if you take 100 monkeys and you were to stick them in a room with typewriters, gave each one an individual typewriter, that I guess within a certain amount of time they will all type all of Shakespeare's sonnets. But that's the only respect that I've ever heard about the 100th monkey. And I really liked what was that movie with Bruce Willis?
12.
In it?
12 Monkeys.
Oh, 12 Monkeys. Yeah, I really like that. But no, I haven't heard about the 100th Monkey.
Dude, Brad Pitt in that movie was – he played such a great kooky freak, man.
Oh, it was so trippy. But, man, what a great movie.
Oh, man. Well, the 100th Monkey – we'll just talk about this a little bit and we'll bring it around. The 100th Monkey – I'm going to read this right off of Wikipedia here. The 100th Monkey effect is a supposed phenomenon in which a learned behavior spreads instantaneously from one group of monkeys to all related monkeys once a critical number is reached. By generalization, it means the instantaneous spreading of an idea or an ability to the remainder of a population once a certain portion of that population has heard of the new idea or learned of the new ability by some unknown process currently beyond the scope of science. We should have some queued up eerie music. Sound effects here. So the popularization of the claim was published in Lytle Watson's book, Rhythms of Vision, in 75, and it spread with the appearance of his 1979 book, Lifetide. But the claim is unidentified. The claim is that unidentified scientists were conducting a study of macaque monkeys on the Japanese island of Koshima in 1952. And these scientists purportedly observed that some of the monkeys learned to wash sweet potatoes. I don't know why it's not coconuts. And gradually this new behavior spread through the younger generation of monkeys in the usual fashion through observation and repetition. Watson then claimed that the researchers observed that once a critical number of monkeys was reached, the so-called 100th monkey, this previously learned behavior instantly spread across the water to monkeys on nearby islands. And so why did we tell you about a bunch of monkeys? Well, what Ivo and I are really trying to do subliminally here is to try and assume that by us just talking about gait, that eventually all of our ideas will spread to the masses across the oceans to everybody in the world, and everybody will start looking at gait and looking at it a little differently. So we are looking for that one person who is the 100th monkey, and we are wondering who it's going to be. Maybe we'll send them a free hat.
Yeah, definitely. Or T-shirt. Maybe both.
Or coconut. Maybe, hey, yeah. a year supply of sweet potatoes.
Yeah, really.
So we'll try and hone a little
off the Facebook page here. How can you find us? Of course, you can find us on our website, www.thegateguys.com. You can find us on Facebook, The Gate Guys. You can find us on YouTube, The Gate Guys. You can find us on Twitter, The Gate Guys. You can find us on Tumblr, http://thegateguys.tumblr.com. And you can find us on our podcasts. So, and you can also find us in Dillon, Colorado, and in Chicago suburbs in that area there. Anyway, Chris wrote, my 12-year-old has some ski boot fit issues. Boy, do we see a lot of that here in the mountains in the wintertime. I took him to a store known to fit race boots, and that didn't obviously pan out. Would you recommend an orthotic brand for ski boots, and when are they necessary in ski boots? Ooh, this is a real loaded question here. Orthotics and footbeds. You know, the main difference is an orthotic changes the biomechanical function of a foot, whereas a footbed merely creates a level surface for the foot. With skiing, it's all about having both edges in contact with the ground for good edge control. And obviously, if you overpronate, you're on your inside edge too much. And if you oversupinate, you're on the outside of the edge too much. Is there a particular brand? Well, not necessarily. The orthotics, when we use them, we use a custom lab, small lab in Idaho Springs called Extreme Footworks, owned by a friend of ours, Sean Eno, who is a pedorthist, extremely bright guy. So if we need an orthotic, we would go with that. There's certainly not a brand. As far as a footbed brand, you know, there's a lot of stuff out there, but I would really caution you to see somebody that's really educated in this and kind of knows what they're doing. And the other thing, too, about race boots is, you know, you have your street shoe size. Race boots are shelled down two sizes. So if you can imagine putting on a shoe, if you were a 10, putting on a size 8, and now asking you to perform athletically in that in some sort of an event. And I deal with this kind of stuff all the time, and the coaches are like, oh, it has to be this tight for control and all this and that. And gosh, I just I really can't say a lot of positive things about the way boots are fit sometimes. I agree that they need to fit snugly, but taking the foot and basically foot binding it, you know, that ended in China lots of years ago. We don't need to do that with our children.
Hey, does it make a big difference between, you know, the telemark skiing that you do and just the traditional you know, way of skiing? I'm not a skier myself, but I know that you do something a little more difficult, right?
Yeah, teleskiing, basically your heel is free and your toe is kind of nailed down to the front. I wear an orthotic in mine because I've got a 4-foot varus that's uncompensated and I need a little bit of help under my first met. Orthotics are probably better for a dynamic activity where your foot is moving, something like telemark, whereas if you're going to use a, you know, use something, a footbed is probably fine for a regular ski boot, but a regular footbed generally doesn't have the same flex. Remember, a footbed just makes a level surface for your foot. It does not create changes, really, in biomechanical function.
So in translating that 4-foot varus that you have that you're trying to correct a little bit with your orthotic, if you didn't use that, would you be finding the inside edge of that ski a little bit more? Is that the point?
Well, I can't get it down.
Okay.
That's my problem. I need to bring the ground up to it. I've got lots of issues, but basically I can't get the inside part of my tripod down, so my knee collapses medially to do that. So it makes it very hard for me to initiate turns on either side, because with telemark you initiate with your front leg, you know, with downhill you kind of initiate with the other leg. But yeah.
So this is kind of there was a bad joke there with you can't get it down. You know, there was a Viagra joke there, but I'm not going to touch it.
Yeah. All right, now don't go there. Don't go there.
Gentlemen, all right, let's see. Gentlemen, we've enjoyed your blog tremendously. My inner mechanics geek motivated me to read all about blog posts and all of your blog posts and go through the YouTube videos as well. Fascinating stuff. Thank you. My reason for writing, however, is more desperate. I have an athlete with a problem and hope that you might provide some guidance. She's experiencing what is being diagnosed as plantar fasciitis with her pain on the medial side of her calcaneus, roughly 2 inches forward of her Achilles and about half an inch up from that. MRI was negative for calcaneal fracture. She's taken several months off and had the site injected, but any return to running brings back her pain. It's her mechanics that might catch your interest. She has what the doctors once referred to as an equinus deformity, essentially running completely on her forefoot. She had heel contact when walking, but is completely on the balls of her feet when racing or training. Her injury history to this point has been minimal, with only minor adductor issue for a day or two in her background. She's been told that her options are injection or surgery. Humbly, is there anything that we can do to help her overcome this? I'm convinced there is an underlying mechanical issue, but her somewhat non-traditional running style leaves me with a few ideas. Any suggestions? Thank you very much. I have a equinus deformity.
Yeah, equinus deformity basically refers to a plantar flex, an inverted foot.
Meaning hypersupinated?
Yeah, hypersupinated would be that. So it's generally a rigid cavus kind of foot. You're going to have a lot of congenital tightening in the posterior compartment, the triceps, the gastroc soleus complex. A lot of times will be somewhat shortened in this area. And you have a difficult time, as we see here, that she can do it when walking, but has a difficult time when running. Forming that medial tripod. Forming the back part of the tripod, not the medial tripod. The other interesting note, too, that kind of contributes to this is we remember that the medial head of the gastroc is larger than the lateral head of the gastroc. And the gastroc works during late stance phase to invert the heel and assist in supination. So if your gastroc's already shortened, you're already going to kind of be pre-supinated. So you're going to be forcing yourself to run kind of on the outside of the foot, or in this case, the outside and possibly the ball of her foot. You know, one of the things I would say is, since she can get there walking, we need to work on increasing the length of that posterior compartment, and one of the best ways to do that is going to be to work the anterior compartment. Your long extensor musculature, extensor digitorum longus, extensor hallucis longus, short extensor of the great toe, extensor hallucis brevis, tibialis anterior, those are all muscles that I'm willing to bet in this woman are either actually or functionally weak. And if we can actually get these muscles to contract, we'll be able to neurologically, reciprocally inhibit that posterior compartment and get it to relax somewhat. Static stretching can be helpful, but as we've talked about, and you guys have probably read it on the blog, you need to stretch at least a half an hour a day per muscle group to actually lengthen the muscle. It doesn't mean you can't get it to the muscle's actual resting length, but to actually lengthen it beyond that, you need to go greater than a half an hour a day. So,
and that's just not our opinion. That's actually factual. You know, we just don't spout out stuff here without having some research to back that up, right?
Exactly. Oh no, I mean we've actually when we put the paper on the blog, it's there.
Good.
So you can
I just didn't want
that.
People to think we're nuts saying half an hour, because I could see some people's eyes rolling and heads shaking here.
No, and stretching is a very controversial subject. We've posted a bunch of posts on it. Just go to the blog and type in stretching in the search box, and you can start to bring up some of the stuff that we've written on it.
Yeah. So, you know, if her posterior compartment's that tight, her ankle rocker or ankle dorsiflexion is going to be impaired, which means her ability to utilize the foot as a shock absorber is going to be next to nothing, and that the forces that come through there are going to be attenuated very poorly and at a different time and rate, et cetera, which constrain the plantar fascia, right?
Well, it's going to do that, and she's also going to have limited hip extension, you know, because of all of that, with that loss of ankle rocker. So, you know, if we were to watch her run, I'm fairly certain that she probably doesn't extend her hip much beyond 0 or 5 or 10 degrees, and we really need, you know, 20 degrees kind of minimum to be able to run appropriately. And if you look at athletes, you watch some of the more elite people, they have great amounts of hip extension and, you know, less vertical oscillation when they're running. But that's a discussion for another whole pod here.
Yeah. I mean, rule number one is, you know, if they've got pain in the foot, you know, make sure you don't get all tied up in tunnel vision looking at the foot. I mean, you know, anything in the foot can be a compensation for what might not be happening at the hip or at the knee. And so we've said this before, if you've got a lack of internal rotation at the hip or extension, the foot's going to try and make up for that differential. And if you've got an equinus rigid foot on the bottom end of that, something's got to give, and it just may be the plantar fascia.
Right. And in this case, that's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's just, you know, creating a lot. Plus, with running on your forefoot, you have to dorsiflex that great toe, which through the windlass mechanism tensions that plantar fascia even more, because part of its function is to help resupinate that foot. Mm. So that just puts a lot of stress. And then for every step she's taking, she's got her weight times acceleration due to gravity, you know, and it ends up being about 15 times the same force that when you're walking. So, yeah.
So remember, guys, with all of these things, when we throw out our ideas, we're just trying to help educate you here. We're not diagnosing or telling you what to do to treat this. You guys need to understand that there's a subliminal disclaimer on all of our stuff here. We're just trying to help you guys gain information. We're not telling you what to do with these cases. So,
right, and everyone is individual. She could have a fixed deformity of her tail or head when she just can't go beyond that, you know, which is really common when we're seeing bone formation. During the birthing process and stuff like that, like with, you know, Rothbart feet or where we have derotation or don't have derotation of the tail or head.
Yeah, there's
so there could be a number of
things.
Yeah,
there's so many
factors. We haven't examined it. We're just trying to educate you.
Yeah, there's so many factors here that we can't that we know that probably are not even being put into the email. But hope that helps a little bit for you. Whoever that was, they didn't leave us a name. Okay.
No, they didn't. Hey, here's another one. Okay. It comes from Ruru. No name, other name was given. Hi, I have what is called a Rothbart foot structure. Oh, Sean, this is like right up your alley here. I have had posture problems, but now strengthening the foot simply by wearing minimalist shoes has improved tremendously. At the moment, my foot does not have any prominent hallux valgus. I think they might be from another country here. Mm-hmm. However, my father, from whom I've most likely inherited the foot structure from, does have a hallux valgus on both feet. I have relatively flat feet. However, my father does not really have flat feet because it looks like the bunion is supporting his arch. My question is, what would I need to wear would I need to wear these posture control insoles, which are a 3.5 millimeter wedge under the first met, in order to prevent the bunions? Why would I need to wear insoles in any case? I do not understand. Thank you very much for the great job with all the YouTube videos. Sincerely,
Terry. Yeah. Well, Rothbart foot structure. Make sure you go to our blog and type in Rothbart, R-O-T-H-B-A-R-T, into the search, and hopefully you will be able to pull up one of our first blog posts ever, I think, in that first month. The blog's over a year old now, guys, so we've probably got, 400 or so blog posts, some good stuff on there. So make sure you always check that resource before you send us an email. We're going to try not to repeat a lot of these things, so we may just, if you don't hear from us, make sure you send it back again, but we may just ask you to find the answer on the blog. Rothbart's foot is a first metatarsal that is not fully descended. Some people will clump the Rothbart foot structure in with something called a metatarsus primus elevatus. Break that down. Metatarsus, the first metatarsal, primus being the first, and elevatus is elevated. In other words, the first metatarsal is slightly dorsiflexed. What that means is that first metatarsal isn't getting to the ground, helping you to form stability of that medial tripod. So, you're the expert on this thing. When the first metatarsal is not engaged on the ground, some of the hallucis muscles, the muscles to the big toe, can't anchor. And the principle on this, and you can, detail this a little bit more, is that when the medial tripod is down, the musculature will pull the lateral foot over to that, forming that transverse arch. But when that first metatarsal is not anchored, such as in this foot structure here, the muscles become they create a pulling fashion over to the lateral foot, and this is what can cause a hallux valgus. You want to comment on that? So the foot bar, he talked about a 3.5 millimeter wedge, and so what this wedge is doing is someone has wisely so put a 3.5 millimeter wedge up underneath the first metatarsal there to bring the ground up to that first metatarsal, essentially re-establishing the medial tripod. These things are referred by some called a cluffy, C-L-U-F-F-Y, cluffy wedge. We make our own in the office and out of a thermo-infused cork, a rubber-infused cork, and we just grind them out so that it helps support that first metatarsal. And then we go ahead and try and give them some tripod exercises, increasing extensor work, helping them find a neutral foot with a good arch, medial tripod anchored. And then as they gain skill, strength, and endurance on that, then we will start to grind out that wedge so that they're only using what they need. Some people, this is it's an impossibility to get that first metatarsal anchored and the tripod restabilized. But a lot of people we're finding, if it's flexible and they can gain enough strength, they can get some stability back into the tripod and reduce this structure. So the first thing you need to find out is it a flexible Rothbart or is it something a little bit more rigid? So thanks very much for your email, Terry. That's a great one. And he's apparently a track coach in Ohio. So hopefully you guys will get on the internet, look up Rothbart foot, and understand that not all pronated feet can go into minimalist shoes. You know, this is one of our primary beefs, is that this minimalist shoe trend, everybody just should have the right to get into minimalist shoes and go barefoot running, etc. And that's just not the case. There's a lot of foot types out there that are going to become implicated in injuries because of the pathophysiology of what they've been given as a foot structure. So we are here to call those folks out that think that everybody should be doing this. It's just not the case. Yeah.
Well, the other thing too, Sean, and I think we did a post on this a couple months back, but otherwise it was just something I read and I thought we posted it. But I read an interesting thing about people that put their kids in orthotics really early. And what that does is it prevents derotation of the talar head from the talar body. The talus is sort of, you know, right behind the navicular, in the arch for those people that are listening here. But that talar head actually rotates down, and it's the force of gravity that actually causes that rotation. And if we prevent the foot from coming down from supportive footwear that, you know, your mom always told you, gee, you need, you know, Buster Browns or Stride Rights or something supportive for your foot, you're actually doing the kid a disservice because you're actually promoting Rothbart foot structure. And they actually referenced that in the article. It was pretty interesting. I think it was in one of the PEDS journals.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, so just, you know, the aside of that, the short of that is put your kid in, you know, barefoot, Robies, socks, something that's super flexible that's going to allow them to move their feet and make sure it's got plenty of room in that toe box. And we could probably do another whole post or another whole show just talking about kid stuff.
Yeah, it's a hot topic, and it's something that a lot of people, especially first-time parents, really want to know what's going on with the kid. You know, my kid's legs are bowed, his feet are flat. You know, look at the amount of rotation in the limb, and you know, these are a lot of things that are just watchful waiting and making sure that the kid hits the neurodevelopmental landmarks as they derotate the limb. But I think it's a topic we probably need to do probably a whole podcast on and, you know, get some articles and literature. So what do you say?
We need to get through the 8 billion questions that we have.
Yeah.
From the backlog of requests that we've had over the last couple months, I think before we go there, but
in time.
Probably not
in
until
time.
Later. Yeah, in time.
Yeah. What do you say we close up the shop here, man?
Hey, that sounds good. Good job today, Sean.
Yeah,
it's,
great.
Nice to talk about some of this stuff.
Yeah. So it's thanks, everybody, you know, from our studios here in Chicago and Dillon. We figured out a way to have a cyber virtual studio, and hopefully you guys can't even tell that we're not in the same room. So
that's
we
right.
do have our –
That's scary when we're in the same
it
room.
It is. Yeah, it is.
But we're
actually
both pretty small people, so we don't take up much space.
So,
plus you like to live on the edge, so we're definitely not taking up too much space.
Well, before we cue up the house band here, which we encourage you guys to listen to at the end because it's got a lot of punch. We found a great band. It's not a little bit like AC/DC, huh, man?
Yeah.
Led Zeppelin, AC/DC. But anyways, I like the format. Hope you guys do as well. Please send us your emails. And then go ahead and listen to the podcast, and hopefully your email will be there. In time, what we hope to do on the website is have a section for the podcast where we will have a table of contents where you guys can go to that part, and you can look and see what topics were discussed and hopefully see your email there, and then you'll know which podcast to listen to. But hopefully after listening to today's, you'll realize that there's just a lot of good fodder here that you can absorb into your cranium and really try to make yourself better at your craft. So hopefully we'll have some more good stories, more good cases, interesting facts, and lots of good stuff on gait and movement for you in future podcasts. But again, we like this format. Hope you guys do as well. Listen to us while you're out in the garden or doing the dishes or folding laundry. Hopefully we can be entertaining, stimulating, and help you with what you guys love, which hopefully is what we love, which is gait. So anything you want to talk about here, Ivo, before we close up here?
You know, I think you've pretty much said it all. I will say, though, that we do get requests for people that want to be on the show. And if that's something that you want to do, please send us an email and a bio and a little essay or reason like why you think that you can add to our listenership's education. John and I don't endorse particular products. As far as, you know, we're not saying, oh, we only use, you know, Scrubbo soap or something like that. But we certainly have products that we like a lot more than others. People that send us stuff, we always give them the disclaimer. It's like, well, if you want us to run a review, just be aware that we're going to say you know, what we really think, and we're going to bring out what we feel might be, you know, the good as well as the bad. And most people that have a solid product really have no problem with that. They actually want to know more about if there's an issue or something like that, and they want to make sure that they address that. So,
yeah, I mean, and if you come on the show, we're going to have some good discussions, and it's okay to agree to disagree. I mean, we know we don't know everything, and we're just two really curious guys. So if you come on and you've got something you want to talk about, we'll try and make it constructive. We'll ask the hard questions, and you know, we're open to being wrong, but we want our listeners to get the facts. So hopefully you'll want to come on here and talk about whatever makes your, you know, whatever gets your engine going here. But so just contact us. Let us know what you have to offer to our community here.
Right.
Sounds good. Once again, we will try and do this each week. Hopefully, send us your stuff. We'll try and get back to you. But thank you for listening to us today. Thanks for all the encouragement, nice emails, and make sure you forward us on to your friends. So in the meantime, I am Sean Allen in Chicago.
And I'm Dr. Ivor Worlup in Dillon, Colorado. And we hope you guys have an awesome week. Take care, get out there, and be observant.
Yeah. Take care, everybody.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Cue up the band.
Cue the band.